AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Disrupted shipping lanes at the Gulf and a snarled up mess of shipping containers. It is proving very difficult to sort it out. We'll get the latest on that. And the Farmer Forum will give us some insights into how these shipping issues are influencing business decisions.
Live from the week's majestic midsection via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Ken Erickson from IHS Market. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Joe Del Bosque and Randy Francis. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, hey, thank you so much, and welcome to a Wednesday. Farmer Forum that we've got planned, I think, is going to be really interesting this morning. We had that Hogs and Pigs report. We talked about it on Monday. We talked about it again yesterday. It's kind of a benchmark report as far as how it may influence business decisions for hog producers and independent hog producers in the future. That's one of the reasons we've got Randy on, Farrow to Finish guy, and we'll get the latest on what Randy is thinking there as far as, you know, can you afford to expand and take on that additional risk. So Joe with his produce business out in California, we'll find out how the impacts on the export markets are having any impact on his business at all. You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not exactly sure. We'll find out from Joe coming up here in just a little bit. And of course, labor issues. But first, the shipping situation, Davis. We're trying to stay on top of it as best we can, and the situation changes so quickly. Sounds like CHS facility down at Myrtle Grove,
yes,
is back up and operational, but they're having to run on generators rather than power because the power isn't going to be restored to that area until the end of next week at the earliest. They're running, but are they really running if they're having to run on generated power? I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. So
yeah, I'm not sure.
But
sure how that
we'll find
either.
Out from Ken. Oh, how's things going, man?
Oh, we're good. I'm trying to think of something to complain about.
Oh,
I just
good.
Can't do it. I just can't do
nice.
It. I got nothing.
It's another beautiful day in northern Iowa.
Well, we're off to a good start.
You bet. You bet. All right, let's get started with the news. What you got?
Chip, funding for the government runs out Thursday at midnight Eastern time, but there is bipartisan support for a partial stopgap approach. If the Senate clears that measure today, the House could take it up either today or sometime Thursday to avoid a partial government shutdown. If that measure clears, the only real lingering congressional deadline would be suspending the debt limit. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says that must happen by October 18.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's the only congressional deadline left, unless you want to consider the self-imposed deadlines that they've already missed on voting on the infrastructure and the Green New Deal package.
Sure, sure. Oh, you're just going to call it Green New Deal package now, aren't
done.
You? You're just
I'm
going
done.
Right out there. Attaboy.
I'm done.
Attaboy. Confidence among U.S. consumers declined in September for the third consecutive month, as the Delta variant of COVID-19 and concerns about inflation weighed on household moods. The conference board's Consumer Confidence Index fell to 109.3 in September from 115.2 in August. Consumer confidence hints at Americans' willingness to spend on goods and services. That's the major driver of the U.S. economy.
And it's still a question of just how much of this demand is pent-up demand from what wasn't spent last September. Okay. Right.
U.S. exports of goods hit a fresh record in August, a sign that recoveries are gaining strength in other parts of the world. Even with a boost in shipments to overseas markets, the merchandise trade deficit widened last month as imports also increased, according to Commerce Department data. Trade volumes for goods have surpassed pre-pandemic levels, attesting to a rapid recovery, but also helping to explain why supply chains have been stretched.
Yeah, those are backwards-looking numbers there. Those are for August.
Right.
It feels like a different situation in September after Hurricane Ida.
It does. Well, global banks are slashing growth forecasts for China's economy in the third quarter. Goldman Sachs has released its forecast, which calls for zero Chinese GDP growth during the quarter. The bank cites production curtailments in China's factory sector, COVID-related lockdowns, and tight supplies of coal to generate power. The bank also cut its Q4 GDP growth expectations from previous forecasts, noting considerable economic uncertainty in China. Chip, China and the U.S. were at odds Monday at a WTO dispute settlement body meeting over the September 2nd dispute panel ruling, which found the U.S. was justified when it imposed safeguard duties on imports of solar cells from China. China filed an appeal of the ruling on September 16, but action on that will remain on hold as the appellate body remains shuttered. President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw all troops from Afghanistan was against the personal judgment of two of his highest-ranking military officials. Both General Mark Milley and General Frank McKenzie said on Tuesday during testimony on Capitol Hill that they believed roughly 2,000 troops should have remained in Afghanistan. General McKenzie said, quote, Chip, the war on terror is not over and the war in Afghanistan is not over.
Right.
In a somewhat related note, General Milley also said two calls he made to his Chinese counterparts in the final weeks of the Trump administration were a normal part of the job and were coordinated with the acting defense secretary and other top officials. Republicans have been pretty critical of those phone calls, Chip.
I would guess that they, that's a normal part of the job. Kudlow is losing his mind over this. Larry Kudlow.
Saw that.
Love him or hate him, I don't care. But he was a part of the Trump administration, and he's probably got a pretty good idea of what General Milley really did at that time. And he's he is not happy with the general, that's for sure. Davis, thank you. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How you doing, Margie?
Hey, Chip. Doing well this morning.
Man, these higher fertilizer prices on everybody's mind. It's time to really step up communications with the retailers, isn't it?
Yeah, we know farmers and retailers are having some tough conversations, being asked some tough questions. And as one industry professional recently told me, retailers should just be truthful about the facts of this fertilizer market. As our friend of AgriTalk, Josh Linville, says, the series of black swans. So we have higher natural gas prices, which we know drives the price of nitrogen fertilizer. We have changing domestic overseas imports. You know, the long chain, the pipeline of global supplies and fertilizer has been drawn down in recent years, as well as through COVID and the strong demand that we saw last year. We also have a lot of containers that are displaced. And as you guys talked about in the news, Hurricane Ida and its impact on the river system and what's going on in both the fertilizer and the grain trade, we're still feeling that. I have heard, you know, the first quarter of 22, we could see the first window of opportunity as far as some lightening up of these natural gas prices, but we continue to monitor that market. And right now, the manufacturers are hesitant to really increase their global production because they don't necessarily want to build stocks at these high manufacturing costs. So those are the facts. And folks, I think that there's been a lot of chatter too, to reinforce that this is not, you know, the folks out in the field at your retail location, they are not at fault here. It's just a series of black swans.
Yes, gotcha. Thank you, Margie. That's right. Be in communication with your retailers. Line up and lock in your needs for this fall. It's got to be done.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk with Ken Erickson next. Joining me is Dr. Roy Brister, PhD. He is the Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. Dr. Brister, how important is soybean meal in the diet of poultry?
Well, soybean meal is our gold standard that we measure everything against. And what we like about soybean meal is the fact that it's available and it's fairly consistent. When we look at it, it ranges in protein from 45 to 48. But typically within a plant, it's very consistent. So it's a consistent source of protein. The digestibility is excellent. The balance of amino acids is probably better than any other protein source we have out there.
Okay, as a large animal producer, one of your top nutritional needs is amino acids provided by the proteins. Why is it important to look at protein content in a load of soybeans?
Me and my team are always looking at the protein levels in these soybean meals that we get from all these sources and try to help our purchasing group understand what is the best price per unit of protein.
Dr. Brister, are you seeing a range of protein content? And I mean, how big of a deal is 1 or 2 percentage points?
For the last 3 months, proteins range anywhere from a 45.5 to about a 48% protein. If you just were looking at buying a ton of soybean meal, and you could buy a ton of 45% protein soybean meal or a ton of 48% protein, at 3%, that's 60 pounds of protein. You know, and a lot of times we pay for it based on a ton, but if you put that on a per unit of protein basis and you've got to haul 2,000 pounds, I'd rather haul 2,000 pounds of 48% than 2,000 pounds of 45%, just from a sustainability. And I'd have to haul a lot more of the 45. So when you start looking at cost, those small percentages add up.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Brister. That is Dr. Roy Brister, Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. For more information on how U.S. soybeans provide protein for animal agriculture, visit soymeal.org. Brought to you by the Soy Checkoff.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back. We're going to get to the conversation with Ken Erickson here in just a moment. But Davis, what Margie was talking about, let's go back to Europe in the middle of the summer when they were dealing with really hot temperatures. They've shut down their coal-burning electricity plants. They were trying to rely on solar and wind. And guess what?
Yes.
They found out that that was inadequate. Mm-hmm. So they fired up the old plants using natural gas.
Right.
And as a result, here they are dealing with unbelievably tight pre-winter stocks.
Yes.
The same thing is happening in Asia and in China. And Josh Linville, who you are going to have a conversation with tomorrow, Josh Linville
tomorrow
is the fertilizer expert at StoneX, is reporting that what's the story there out of China? They're banning some exports.
I'm just going to read the tweet that he put out. Chinese government has effectively banned phosphate exports through June 22nd. China accounts for almost 30% of world trade. Watch
June
22. Similar, June 22. Yeah.
Yes.
Watch for similar urea action.
Right. Right. I mean,
now,
this is
now they've cut back a little bit on their nitrogen exports. We need to get to Ken. I know, but China's cut back. They used to be a world leader in that.
Yeah.
So, but it both of these are going to impact price. I guarantee.
I'll give you another one of Josh's tweets that was out early. Okay. He says, I've said it before and I'll continue saying it. This is not like 2008. It's scarier.
Yes. Yes.
You need to get to the bottom line with Josh on that tomorrow. Okay.
We're going to do it.
Wow.
Going to do it.
That's going to be interesting. Ken Erickson is the transportation infrastructure energy expert and analyst there at IHS Market. And he joins us right now. Ken, how are you doing?
Great. Hey, good conversation you were having there with China. That's very relevant to what we're going to talk about because with there you're seeing with energy around the world, guess what? You got to go back to some of the old technology, coal, the four-letter word, coal, and you're seeing ocean freight rates responding, going back to, 13-year highs, and you're looking back to 2008 when you had the Lehman Brothers fail. So you're seeing some big surges here. This is a very different environment.
Yeah. It certainly is. Now, those ocean freight rates, Ken, is it because of an increase in demand for those boats, or is it because of the snarled up mess that we've got with the containers?
Well, it's a combination of things. One, on the bulk side, you are seeing great amount of demand for the Capesize, and that's for coal.
Okay.
On the Panamax and smaller vessels, the Supermaxes that we use for grain, they're not as frothy right now as the Capes, but the Baltic dry indexes are running strong. And as those run strong, guess what? You can take Panamax vessels, Supramaxes, and deploy them into coal service. And then, of course, they've got their own constraints with COVID in various countries where they get one case, they shut down the whole port, not just a terminal. Same thing with the containers. Container vessels, you're just so imbalanced with so much demand, and you've got countries that basically shut down. They got ships that are just stacked up waiting to get in to get to unload empty containers so they can be load back full containers to get back to Europe or get back to the United States. And that's just, you know, it's a cascading event that we've got dominoes falling everywhere. And all of a sudden you come to that spot where the domino's missing and it can't fall anymore. And now you got all these dominoes waiting to fall, but you can't do anything because you're all backed up so bad. It's really going to be a long tail here as we're coming into the fourth quarter. And for the fourth quarter is a peak season for the United States, and we're just going to be seeing this thing have a tail going all the way through into the new calendar year on container side. And we're seeing container freight rates coming to the United States that are now pushing $25,000, $30,000 a container.
Oh.
I know someone told me the other day who uses containers, he says the freight rate's more expensive than what's in the container.
Right. Right. So well, it used to,
crazy.
Now put that in perspective, because a year ago, weren't the freight rates on those containers like $1,500?
They were much lower, and you're down in the $1,500 to come back to come to the United States here. So, you know, 10 times fold easily on some of these routes that you're seeing out there.
That's unbelievable.
It's demand. It's demand, and it's also just that you've got such a disruption because of COVID that interrupts with things, and this thing, and it just can't move stuff fast enough. When these ships are tied to a schedule, and you break the schedule, all hell breaks loose, right? You know, with the airline industry, you could probably be back in service within 36 hours. You just can't levitate ships and rail cars and barges. They just, once they start piling up, that you just have to wait for there to be a slowdown and a seasonal move. We're just not seeing that for quite a while now.
Oh, good grief. How can you break this down into how it might impact grain movement for us?
Yeah, number one, if we go back where we talked a couple of weeks ago about, you know, the effects of Hurricane Ida and what it did to the Center Gulf, we've basically, of the 9 export elevators that are essentially running down there, 8 of them are up and going, and the one that's not is Cargill Reserve, and it sustained substantial damage. Haven't seen anything publicly from them, but it's going to be a while before they get up and going, probably till after the first of the year. But all of them just got up and running this week combined, and the midstream operators are going, so they're probably at 75% capacity. They're having to cycle through what they had in storage, but they're also having to cycle through with barges that were affected that either got damaged, or you got lids that were blown off, and you got damaged cargo, and now that cargo is just waiting for new crop harvest to come down the river so they can blend it off. And that's just taking some time. And look, coming into the hurricane, as we talked, it was low movements anyways. But now you got this ocean freight rate that's going to, you know, good thing about ocean on the bulk side, freight rates are a global phenomenon. So if they're high in the U.S., they're high elsewhere. The challenge gets to be is that you've got a disruption here. If you look at the spread between the U.S. Gulf and the Pacific Northwest, it's starting to widen here a bit. You're at about $40-some a metric ton, and that typically would favor the Pacific Northwest. But the inland cost of transporting grain is so expensive by rail that you get an offset there. So, but now you've got a situation the barge freight rates are surging. We saw a trade on the lower Mississippi for 1,000% of tariff that puts you out of Memphis, let's say, where I live, at over almost $35 a short ton. So you're looking at about $1.30 out of Memphis right now to get down there. And that's where you've got the big harvest is down here in the lower Mississippi. So, Chip, these things are starting to get very pricey as things are backing up. And that's just going to be a challenge as we go forward here to try to look at these options that the buyers have and what the farmers are being able to do as harvest starts to really kick up here.
Yeah, well, that cost is going to be translated into lower basis, assume, at some point. And it's going to result in challenges to hit what are already some reduced from year ago export expectations for corn and soybeans. It's going to be tough to get to those numbers, isn't it?
It will be, and we certainly lowered our export numbers for corn and beans. And the basis is going to be weakened, but you also have trying to get northbound traffic for fertilizer, yeah. for salt to go upriver. Yeah. Look, talking about the phosphates and the urea, and you look at ammonia, you look at any fertilizer prices now in the Gulf or anywhere in the United States, man, year-on-year prices are just phenomenal. And to try to get it back upriver, urea out of NOLA is about $575 a short ton. A year ago, it was $250 a short ton. So you're looking at a massive increase. Then you try to get the equipment to move it for fall work here. It's going to be a challenge as we go forward here because a lot of barge carriers have been taking empty equipment that was pre-positioned for harvest upriver, moving it down to lower miss. And as soon as they start getting that moving, you get harvest moved upriver, you're going to start seeing these barge freight rates want to move higher on the upper rivers in the Illinois. It's very close to wanting to peg 1,000% of tariff as we go forward here. And that's going to be very expensive that you start thinking about the cost. And at the end of the day, you're going to have a world that still wants some of that grain. While we did cut our exports and we kind of cut them off from the SEPDOC NOVE, pushed them a little bit later, you're still going to have some challenges here that are just going to filter into the system here.
This means nothing but higher prices, say, in central Illinois for nitrogen, right?
Oh, yeah, and by the way, we've got low water conditions that are starting to come. We've been monitoring this since the snowpack last year in the Missouri River, and they're starting to see low water across the river system. And already this week out of St. Louis, it's the fifth lowest stage readings for this week since 1970. You got to go back to 1989 after the 1988 drought, 2012, 2003, 2013, and then you get 2021. And we're not done yet. It's going to be, from our meteorologist, he sees that it's going to be pretty dry. It's not going to get better as we go forward here. So people, it's going to be tough getting northbound equipment. It's going to be tough to get fertilizer for the field work. And then what happens to the southbound when you have to light load or you get restrictions on movements here? It's already bad enough as it is.
Man, you're just full of good news today, aren't you, Ken?
It's always fun to come on Chip Show and bring this good news.
Man, let's stay in touch, okay? We're out of time now, Ken, but we need to stay in touch. Let's talk rail next time. All right, Ken Erickson from IHS Markets.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, we talked yesterday afternoon about what's going on in these markets, and it feels like a lot of give and take and ebb and flow in these prices ahead of Thursday's grain stocks and small grain summary, right?
Yeah, kind of caught a bid here across the grain and soy markets at mid-morning and have extended a little bit to the upside, so trading near session highs in most of the markets. So I just think it's mostly pre-report positioning as we wait on that data. Now, as I mentioned yesterday afternoon on the show, the grain stocks have been the real market mover, especially on the corn side of things. So we'll have to see if that whole thing surprises either bullish or bearish tomorrow.
Right. Okay, let's go over to hogs because they opened lower and they opened on session lows, and they're trying to claw back to get back on top of unchanged. This is this market showing some guts.
Yeah, I suppose it probably isn't too surprising to see a little bit of profit taking after we saw the price gains the past 2 days and even the days prior to the hogs and pigs report. So to see a little bit of pullback here, but if we would finish the thing higher today, boy, that would be a real impressive showing after the weaker open, like you mentioned.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What's going on in the cattle complex?
Very little, to be honest with you. Initial cash cattle trade starting to trickle in about steady levels, so no real surprise there. and just no real buyer interest in the futures at the moment. We do have the feeder cattle. They're under pressure because of the strength in the corn market, and live cattle are kind of following them a little bit to the downside.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Hey.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Davis, you getting worked up about all this fertilizer and shipping costs and everything?
It just keeps coming.
Chip. Yeah, it does.
I was saying in the break, I wrote about a bunch of this and the potential impacts on farm profitability for landowner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I can't. I mean, I made a laundry list of supportive factors, including the stuff in Europe, China, Brazil.
Yeah.
I could have written 3 pages and the news just keeps coming, and all of it is price supportive for its own reason.
Yeah,
scary stuff.
Absolutely. It very, very much is. All right, let's get this farmer forum started. We're still getting Joe on the line with us, but we've got Randy Francis from Northeast Iowa on the line with us. Randy, how you doing?
Good. Hey, Davis was talking about his complaints. My biggest complaint right now, these 50 degree mornings, 80 degree afternoons, I don't know where I put my sweatshirt. Every morning I got to round up my sweatshirts, my coffee mugs. I don't know whether they're in my truck or the combine. I got probably 13 sweatshirts in my truck right now, and I don't know where to find them all. So I think a lot of farmers can probably relate to that.
Just get more. That's typically the answer, isn't it? Just get another one.
Yep.
Randy, before we get Joe on the line here, I want to talk to you a little bit about you were recently elected to head up the Young Farmer Advisory Committee for the Iowa Farm Bureau, man. Congratulations and good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. My wife and I, Megan, are in our third year on the committee, and every year the committee names a third year member to be the chair of the committee program, and I was elected by my peers for that. My wife and I have been involved in Farm Bureau for 5-7 years. So it's something we've really, really looked forward to every year, being a part of that program. And I really look forward to being the chairman of that program and seeing where that can take us. So we oversee the entire state of the program. We help work with the Young Farmer Conference. That's every this January. So. Yeah. No, I look forward to it. There's a lot of energy in that program. You see a lot of the young farmers, and you know, it's really cool with young farmers is everybody's going through the same experiences.
There you go. Yep.
And sort of to talk about it through the state, it's really unique to see that. So.
Well, Iowa young farmers, you got a good one because I've talked with Randy about this. I've talked with Randy about this, and you're so excited, and the Young Farmer Committee and the meetings and the conference, it's really kind of changed your life, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And, you know, when I was 18, I didn't think I would probably come back and farm. I played 4 sports in high school, and, you know, I didn't know where my life would take me. And I started at a local John Deere dealership, got involved in the Farm Bureau after that, and then opportunity was to go back to the family farm about the same time as we got involved in Farm Bureau, and it kind of really, really ignited my passion in agriculture, and to see other young farmers and hear what they're going through really ignited my passion, and I want to give back to other young producers having the same experiences. So
there you go.
And that's what
spread the fire, dude,
being the chair. So yep, that's right.
Yep. Spread the fire. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. We've got Joe Del Bosque from California on the line with us from the Central Valley. How you doing, Joe?
Well, I'm doing good this morning. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Joe, have you seen any relief from the drought?
No. In fact, I've never seen so many farmers concerned like they are this year. We're really in fear of what may happen this year. If we have a dry year, we're going to have a disaster next year.
What's the water situation for irrigation? How much have you got access to?
Well, just so your readers, your listeners understand, you know, just about all of California is dependent on irrigation, whether it's from groundwater or surface water. And we're in, we've already passed through 2 years of drought, going into a potential third one. Most of our water is captured in reservoirs and stored until summer when we need it. And then it's brought to us through rivers and canals and so forth. The reservoirs are at some of the lowest levels I've ever seen them. And so we're starting the year, actually the water year here, we do have a water, quote unquote, water year. It starts on October 1st. And it is probably at the reservoirs are probably at the lowest levels they've ever been.
Oh, goodness. Goodness, goodness, goodness. Okay. We were talking about shipping issues and how it's affecting some of the exports and everything, Joe. First off, remind the listeners about your farm and tell them about your farm, what you produce, and where your product goes.
All right, so I'm like right about in the middle of California in the Central Valley. We grow fruits, vegetables, and nuts here. Currently, because of the drought, we've eliminated most of the vegetables, and we're down to a couple of crops, that is melons and almonds. Most of our melons, because they're organic, just stay here within the country, and some go to Canada. And then there's issues trucking there, but the almonds, most of them go overseas. It's a big export product for all of California, and maybe one of the biggest export products. And a lot of crops from California are exported. It's citrus and grain and rice, yeah. Tomato products, and so forth. So yeah, it's a big deal here to export.
Yeah. Are you seeing any impacts on your markets because of the snarled up mess that we've got out on the West Coast with shipping? Well, I shouldn't just say the West Coast, Joe. It's all over the world.
Yeah, I think it is. And because, you know, our ports are the ones that go directly to Asia, and those are our big markets. We do ship a lot to Europe also. In the Middle East, but Asia is our big market. A lot of our products go there from the West Coast ports. Mm-hmm. Here in California, we have several ports. We've got Long Beach and LA, and then we have up here in Northern California, we have Oakland, Port of Oakland, which is where most of our stuff from the Central Coast is shipped out of.
Okay. All right. Very good. Randy, what about you? Have you seen that negative basis down at the Gulf make its way up the river?
No, it hasn't affected us. We stayed pretty firm here in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, you know, being the largest user of corn and beans here, you know, stays pretty firm. And we haven't, you know, crop harvest has progressed pretty quickly here, but there's not a lot of new crop flowing into the system yet to really, things are moving, but not, you know, everybody's still kind of getting going here. So
haven't
impacted too much.
Yeah. What is the status on your corn and bean harvest for you?
We should finish up soybeans tomorrow with everything going well. We've been able to, you know, weather's been really good and been able to push this bean crop along. And, you know, a lot of guys are fighting. The stems are green, but the moisture is dry. So they cut hard, but everything is coming out in a timely manner. We've combined just a few acres of corn just to make sure things were fired up. You know, we'll focus our attention on that. Next week, full force. So,
okay. You going to give us a hint
to it.
On how the beans are yielding?
Beans are, what's the word right now? Better than expected, right? No, beans are very good. Beans are made in August. So we had 12 inches of rain in August here on our farm. So that's very, very good. The beans were at a prime position to to use that moisture, and we're being rewarded for the moisture right now.
Joe, so, Joe, what would you do with 12 inches of rain in August?
It would devastate us. Unfortunately, you know, we need rain, but not in August. You know, we have a Mediterranean climate to which our crops are made for, and we really don't want any rain from, you know, about April till about October.
Yeah. You want to be able to manage that water flow going onto it rather than losing some crops to too much rain, right?
Exactly. Yeah, our rain and snow, particularly snow, is expected in the winter time, from December to February, and we want to capture it and bring it when we need it, not when exactly when God wants to give it to us.
Right. Right. Okay. Guys, we're coming up on a break, but I want you to be thinking about a couple of things during the break, so that when we come back, we can hit this hard. Randy, I got to get your take on the Hogs and Pigs report. What has happened to the market since then? Has it changed how you are looking at that hog market going forward? Are we going to see some expansion come into play? Randy, I want to get that from you. And Joe, your labor issues. I know that the diversity of your crops has gone down because of the weather conditions, but you still got to have the labor out there to make sure that what you've got is harvested and taken care of. So I want to talk to you about labor issues. And then both of you, let's get your impression on I've just started calling it the Green New Deal. Is this something that we need to support, or is it stop the bill? Let's figure that out. We've got Randy Francis from Iowa and Joe Del Bosque from California here on the Farmer Forum.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum. Just a reminder that the Farmer Forum is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. That's ACAM. If you want to learn more about that, just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. Thank you to all the sponsors of ACAM and to ACAM for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. Randy Francis from Iowa, Joe Del Bosque from California. Randy, that Hogs and Pigs report that we got on Friday showed us a smaller than expected market hog inventory. The breeding herd inventory was basically in line with expectations, but those farrowing intentions aren't anything spectacular. What are the signals that you took from that report?
What I took from the report, you know, very bullish. It's given opportunities to get some risk management done here, not only in the short term, but out into next summer, next October. Prices are really strong. You know, as far as the pork industry goes and future expansions, I feel like the pork industry, we're just kind of catching our breath from what's been the marathon in the last 18 months here.
Yeah.
With so many changes in shipping and packing plants and everything, there's still so much uncertainty on the horizon. You know, we have we're coming into a period where we have a lot of high kill numbers in the October time period. Are we going to be able to get the pigs killed in a timely manner? You know, we're going to have to work Saturdays. Do we have the labor force? We have Prop 12 still on the horizon. What's that going to impact? You know, NPPC and AFBF is currently fighting that again in the courts. And so there's just too many uncertainties to really get really excited about wanting to expand right now. But at the same time, you know, it's really, really thankful to be able to have these good prices to get some stuff locked in. We can focus on locking in inputs and getting our corn priced, getting our bean meal priced. And, you know, we're looking at good levels so we can keep things in place and keep building for the future. So,
You know, it is such a strange situation. And I think this is the bottom line that we're getting to, is there's financial incentive to expand, but some of those outside influences are putting a cap on those expansion plans. And we can't forget about the cost of construction, too. I mean, it's not cheap to put up a new barn, is it?
No, it's not. And you know, that might not be a terrible thing for the industry. You know, every time we've had the opportunities to expand, we've done it. You know, and maybe it's a good time to just be content with where we're at and let things play out a little bit. And maybe we'll be have multiple years of, you know, a good run here. So,
yeah, we've got the labor issues here in the middle of the country, Joe. When it comes to processing and comes to working on dairies and hog farms and everything. But you've been dealing with labor issues out your way forever, haven't you?
We have. It's, you know, when you have as much labor as we do in these hand harvested crops, it's always a big deal here in California. And we produce so many fresh fruits and vegetables that it requires a lot of labor. And this year, you know, labor, and let me also paraphrase this, that is very important to me because they're an integral part of our farm, and I advocate for labor as much as I do for farmers. But this year we're in a precarious position where we're between not enough workers for farmers and not enough work for farm workers. And this year our farm workers, because of the lack of water, reductions in acreage, most of them suffered a reduction in income, and that looks to be like about 10 to 15% reduction in their income, and that hurts them, and it can hurt us in the long run also, because they may go off to other industries for work if they don't have enough work here on the farms.
Yeah, well, you know, and some of those other labor options for those workers, Joe, they're ratcheting up their pay where they're competing with guys like you out there now, right?
Absolutely. You go around the countryside here and you'll see signs on the post saying truck drivers wanted, we'll train you, come and work for us. And, you know, and we know that here the truck drive, you know, we are short of truck drivers here. That has impacted us. We can't get our product to market quickly, and it's become more expensive. So, yeah, there's a lot of competing industries here looking for workers. It's really a strange situation we're in.
Yeah, yeah. Randy, let's switch gears, go back to D.C. and what's happening out there. What do you make of this social infrastructure plan that is being pushed?
We don't know how this can impact us. I mean, from the tax consequences to everything, I mean, we need to continue to fight and work with them. We need to leverage ethanol and biofuels, that they are a green product. Everything we can do to push for that. You know, it's probably inevitable that some change is going to happen, and we want to be on the right side of the table and making sure that we are letting our, you know, the good things that ethanol and everything can provide, that we're there. We're telling them that we're ready to meet the need.
We at least, you said it right, Randy, we got to make sure that we're at the table in these conversations as they go forward. Joe, what's your take on the situation?
Well, green in California is really, you know, the color of our state here. And, our state is not really interested in going to biofuels. They're more interested in getting fossil fuel driven engines off the road. And that means going to electric, which also, you know, for us, that means that, you know, it could affect everyone. But for farmers, there's going to be lots of lands that maybe are going to be put up in solar farms. So it's a new world here in California, and we're watching it with a lot of caution.
Well, Joe, we're going to rely on you.
All our farmers.
Yeah, yeah, we're seeing that here too, aren't we, Randy? I mean, it's hard to believe that.
Yep, windmills, solar farms. Yep. I mean, thousands of acres of prime productive farmland getting transitioned to solar. It's something that landowners and people that live in those communities are very, very concerned about right now.
Exactly. Guys, we're out of time. Great job. Randy, thank you so much for your time today. Joe, thank you. Appreciate you guys very much.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
that's
Chip.
Farmer Forum
Safe
for today.
Harvest,
come back this afternoon. Matt Bennett, agmarket.net.